This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 14th day of March 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And then a bit later in the program, the folks at the Andersons will be here to take a look at the cash grain market. Speaking of them, Brian Stark will be with me tonight at the Champaign County Farm Bureau building. If you'd like to get another primer on what's happening in the marketplace, he and I will take you through that starting at 7 o'clock. It's open and free to everyone. A bit later in this half hour, we'll take a look at the weather forecast too, that with the guys up at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. And along the way, I'll bring you some views on the upcoming grain stocks and prospective plantings report from University of Illinois agricultural economist Daryl Good on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look at the numbers now as they finished up in Chicago for this Monday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit were up 0.75 cents at the end of the day. The March contract at 3.66¾. May futures there finished at 3.68¾, 3¾ higher. And in the July, 3.73½, the settlement price up 4 cents. December corn at 3.87, up 4¼. Soy complex was unchanged in the nearby March soybeans at $8.88. May at $8.95¾ unchanged. In July at 9.02, up a half. November beans at 9.07, a quarter of a cent higher. Bean meal down $3.90 at 2.68.10. The bean oil up 32 cents at 32.25. Soft red winter wheat opinion 3/4 higher at 4.71½. July at 4.85¾, up 3. The hard red July at $4.99, 3/4 of a cent higher. Live cattle futures on the day. Nearby April at 139.25, 55 cents lower. The June at 128.82½, up 27.5 cents, and March feeder cattle at 50 cents lower, 161.90. April futures 162.45, down 27.5 cents. Lean hogs April contract per 100 pounds, $70.90. That finished 92.5 cents lower. The May contract at 79.15. Down a dime for the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For 100 years, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Here's what some of the outside markets look like at this hour. Ethanol futures at $1.43⅛ per gallon. That's up 0.8 cents. Crude oil today at $37.27 a barrel, $1.23 lower. Gasoline on the wholesale price at $1.42½ per gallon, down 0.1 cents. And heating oil or diesel fuel down 1⅛ cents. It's trading at $1.20 even. Natural gas for the day at $1.81⁄6 is 0.6 cents lower. Dow Jones Industrial Average 17,256, up 72 points. U.S. dollar is stronger at 0.328 higher, 96.5 is the trade. And the gold futures on the afternoon at $1,235.75 per ounce, down $23.75. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area yet today. Cloudy, a high of 63. Northwest winds this afternoon at 3 to 5 tonight. Mostly cloudy, a low of 49. Winds will be calm out of the southeast this evening at 5 to 7 after midnight. And then Tuesday, a 50% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms in the area before 2 in the afternoon. Mostly cloudy otherwise, a high of 72. It will be breezy during the day tomorrow with a southeast wind at 7 to 12, turning to the south-southwest by the time we get to the end of the day at 15 to 20, with gusts as high as 30. And then a chance of rainfall again on Tuesday evening. That'll come before 11 in the evening. A chance of showers between 11 and 2 a.m. and mostly cloudy otherwise overnight. A low of 42. West winds at 11 to 16. Gusting as high as 23 miles an hour. More on the weather at the bottom of the half hour.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Monday afternoon. It's the 14th day of March. Find us online at WILLAG.org. We're joined now by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to take a look at the trade in Chicago for the day. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Now, tell me about the trade in Chicago, why it was that corn managed to rally today, but beans were nearly unchanged.
Well, we saw commodity fund activity. Funds bought about 9,500 contracts of corn, 2,500 contracts of wheat, 3,200 contracts of beans going into midday. It's kind of generated from some short-term buy signals being generated. A lot of the fundamental news was, you know, huge record short position and a little too short, and they needed to cover some of that position. I think some other things, too, was 20 inches of rain, Louisiana. It's going to slow down the planting progress of the south for a few days. Not going to be too far behind, but, you know, slow things down. But behind-the-scenes activity, spread unwinding. I think, you know, we saw some unwinding of wheat, beans, corn, bean spreads, and mainly crude oil corn spreads. When you kind of watch what's these traders are doing, a lot of the hedge funds bought crude oil and sold corn against it, and with the crude oil correcting in through here, I think that gave the corn a little bit of a lift throughout today. We'll see if that trend continues. Today's high in the May corn, 369 and a quarter, 62% back up to the February high. So in order to see this rally continue in the corn, we need to see a close above 369 and a quarter in May to keep the momentum up, Todd.
So you think there's anything out there that on the fundamental supply side would do that, whether that's slowed down planting and rainfall, yet this in the near term, that is, yet this spring in the United States, something else on the planet, or is it about crude oil and a higher price there that might move it above that?
I think it's more of a little bit of an energy play in through here. To go much higher or sharply higher, we're just going to have to see, you know, some export demand come at us. That's the fear here as we move into the spring is export demand. But also, too, there might be a little story from these shippers, exporters, want to get this grain shipped fairly in a timely fashion and wants to secure inventory. There's a little bit of fear that with Baltic freight rates at, you know, all-time lows, that some of these shipping companies might get into some financial trouble, so there might be some validity there that, you know, they want to hurry up and get some grain purchases and move, but they're not standing in line to drive the market sharply higher, of course. But I think we're just still in the same pattern we've been in for the last 6 months. We'll receive some positive news and some technical help on the short term, then, you know, back the other way. I think the trade's still waiting or eager to see what type of news we have here at the end of the month on the stocks, see what type of inventory that kind of gauges demand, of course, and, of course, the acreage estimate. We'll have the NOPA crush report here tomorrow at 11 a.m. The average trade guess for bean crush is 139.9 million bushels. We saw 150.5 in January, 147 a year ago, so, you know, if we come into that 140 million bushels or less, it kind of suggests that the crush might be slowing slightly for beans. Oil stock guess is about 1.59 billion pounds there, Todd.
When you look to the end of the month and the grain stocks report, along with the acreage numbers, have you been considering what that really means? The grain stocks is a bit of a moving target in whether or not you feel like we're back to the old seasonals with the grain stocks and how fast it's used, or we should maintain the increased usage pace that happened during that five-year period where market prices were moving higher. And secondly, then, and I don't know whether you want to take the grain stocks up report up or not, or more importantly, the acreage number and looking forward in it and those available acres in their winter wheat and prevent plant that might be around. And I think the number, and Daryl Good will reiterate this a bit later, is something close to, 5 to 6 million acres that could swing this year.
Yeah, on the seasonality, oftentimes you get a little February low, which we did, and we can see some strength into mid-March. But overall, stocks are going to be fairly large, but we got large demand, so overall total numbers compared to past history are big. Some, like to use the stocks use ratio, sort of an indicator to keep that relationship intact. But overall, if we come in as expected, we're going to have ample supplies, of old crop grain going into year end. And that could be a concern if producers don't get caught up on some sales, that we could have two crops coming into town later on, late summer or early fall. As far as acreage, the significance of the acreage report is basically when you visit with analysts and they tinker with the supply-demand balance sheet, that acreage number's at the top of that supply-demand balance sheet, and you can add or subtract 1 or 2 million acres. But once we get those acres kind of dialed in, the next market maker is going to be weather, what type of yield you put on it, and that's going to move the bottom line more than anything, is that number in corn, 10 bushels an acre loss or an extra couple bushels an acre can move the bottom line quite a bit. We kind of feel corn acres are going to be strong up towards 90 million acres throughout the winter here visiting producers. Seems like the American farmers all in and feels like they had the most potential to make money with corn this year. So we're kind of the camp that we're going to see a strong corn acreage number versus last year, Todd.
Hey, thanks so much for being with us. We'll talk with you again in a week.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel, of course, is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and he will travel with me this week on Thursday evening. That's the 17th, St. Patrick's Day, to Taylorville for one of our Will Ag panels. Tonight, by the way, I'll be out too here in Champaign County, so if you get the opportunity, drop out to the County Farm Bureau building, U of I Extension building there on Country Fair Drive in Champaign at 7 o'clock. We'll make a presentation there along with Brian Stark of the Andersons, so that's at their marketing club. Starts at 7. That one's open and free to everyone. In today's agricultural news, the author of a mandatory GMO labeling bill will not support a labeling proposal by USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack. Senator Jeff Merkley, a Democrat from Oregon, says he opposes Vilsack's approach to GMO labeling. Merkley introduced a mandatory labeling bill just a day after the Senate Ag Committee approved a voluntary measure by Kansas Republican Senator Pat Roberts, chairman of the Senate Ag Committee. Vilsack's proposal, known as mandatory disclosure, would use smart labels and 1-800 numbers for consumers to find more information. Merkley responded by saying Americans do not want to stand in a grocery store and make phone calls to companies. All three proposals would ban state labeling laws, such as the one that's about to take effect in Vermont. That's in July. The Senate was expected to vote on the voluntary labeling proposal by Roberts in the coming week. Vilsack has said the federal system has to be mandatory to get the 60 votes needed to pass in the Senate. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., relatively speaking, and in some contentious areas. Trade deals are heating up the presidential campaign. Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and leading GOP contender Donald Trump are all now negative on trade, including the TPP agreement that the American Farm Bureau says could bring $5 billion in new exports for agriculture. That's the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership. Longtime Washington, D.C.-based trade consultant Paul Drasik says, however, the candidates' positions are less about trade and more about politics.
What politics in general have in the election politics on both sides of the aisle, where they stand at the point in time when there's a vote on TPP, will have more to do with the actual final vote count.
With trade leaders in Congress now taking a go-slow approach and the debate over filling a Supreme Court vacancy, TPP may end up waiting until after a new Congress and administration have been seated. Drasik says at that time, local politics can override national politics.
If a member of Congress in Missouri, for example, decides on which way they're going to vote, it's going to be based on what their constituents think about this and whether the constituents that vote for them think about it much more so than where Hillary is on it.
The 12 member countries reached an agreement on the trade deal last fall and signed the TPP last month. It must still be ratified by the governments of each nation included in the deal. And finally today, Bayer Crop Sciences and BASF will introduce genetically modified soybean seeds to farms in Brazil this year. Research and Markets says both companies are trying to break Monsanto's 10-year dominance in Brazil, which is the second largest producer of soybeans in the world, at least until 2017, when they will be the largest, according to the United States Department of Agriculture. Bayer will offer herbicide-resistant soybean seed varieties available for this planting season, which, of course, starts in October. BASF plans to offer its own herbicide-resistant soybean varieties for the next planting season. Soybeans account for about 50% of Brazil's total grain output. The country is supportive of genetically modified organisms, as 94% of Brazil's soybean plantings have been modified to resist glyphosate. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Here's an interesting story on ethanol. It's provided by Ken Root at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. He says a Michigan marina owner says the criticisms against ethanol use in marine engines are unjustified. Keith Holmes is the owner and president of CK Motorsports in Michigan. He's also a certified Mercury Marine mechanic and racing service dealer. A recent article from Boat US claims ethanol causes damage to marine engines. However, Holmes disagrees.
We don't see these problems that people claim, and we work with these fuel products in boat engines. We see the same problems that we've seen 30 years ago, the same as what we still see today. Things aren't built to last forever. No different than we drove around our old 1970 and 80 cars and trucks when the fuel hose went bad on it or the brakes wear out of it. You know, we got to change components and it's wear and tear on the machinery, and you know, we keep repairing it and keep running them.
Critics of ethanol say it allows moisture to collect in the fuel. Holmes says that's not because of ethanol, but rather the environment of the water.
Water contamination just happens in a marine environment because we put boats in water, so they live in a very humid airspace. So we do get a little bit of moisture in our fuel. We've always had it. It's been around ever since boating, you know, has begun in since the 40s and 50s when Mercury started building their first engines in the 50s and started mass producing in the 60s. It's something that's always been around, and it's never going to go away.
In a written response to Boat US, Holmes said all current boat engines are warrantied for E10 and have been for nearly two decades. He adds ethanol is safe to use and better for the marine environment.
You know, the stuff I'm telling people and what we're talking about, it's no different. What Mercury's telling people today is that the fuels are safe to use, the E10 in their engines. They're still 100% warrantied engines. And I think that people have to, you know, have to stop the confusion and make people understand what we're doing with the fuel, why it's better for our environment with the cleaner air. You know, we have clean water now, especially out, you know, if we can use E10 out in the marine world with the environment and the biology, it's going to only give us clean boating.
That's Keith Holmes, the owner and president of CK Motorsports in Michigan. Our thanks go to Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network's Ken Root for bringing us this story. USDA will officially kick off the new year for the spring planted crops when it releases two reports on the last day of the month. The grain stocks and prospective plantings reports will be released March 31st. Darrell Good says both will help set the tone of the trade for corn and soybeans going forward.
The stocks report will be modestly important, as it always is for corn. We've talked before about give us a read on how fast we're feeding last year's crop. But the real information will be in the prospective plantings report, and Again, that's kind of a mixed bag because we know that in any given year, actual plantings always deviate from intentions. But certainly when we see the March survey and what farmers are planning on this year, will provide a lot of information to the market about potential size of the upcoming crops.
The prospective plantings report is set up to be very interesting. More than a few acres around the United States need a new home on the spreadsheets. For instance, last fall, farmers seeded about 2.8 million fewer acres of winter wheat than they did the previous year. When you couple those acres with what most expect to be fewer prevent plant acres, it creates an interesting combination, says the University of Illinois agricultural economist.
On the surface, it should say we'll have more acres available than we had last year. What the intentions report will give us a hint at is whether producers are thinking about leaving some acreage idle in 2016 because of the generally low commodity prices. For example, will the winter wheat acres that didn't get planted go to fallow, or will they go to annual pasture, or will they go to sorghum or an oilseed? Will we see some of the so-called fringe areas leave some acreage idle, as the numbers would suggest we have seen in the past when prices are low? So that big picture question will be the most important in the March plantings report.
Again, the reports will be released March 31st. Last year, there were 6.7 million acres of prevent plant. That's on the high side because of the heavy 2015 rainfall. Darrell Good expects this year to be something closer to 3 million acres. And when you round up to 3 million fewer acres of winter wheat, you get about 6 million float acres that need a home this year, either idled or planted. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Monday afternoon. Greg Johnson is here. He's with the Andersons to take a look at what happened in the cash grain market for the afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, tell me about the little up move we had in corn. Why do you think it happened?
I think a combination of two things. I think the commitment of traders report over the weekend showed the funds still extremely short corn. And with the government report coming up at the end of the month in 2 weeks, I think they just decided to lighten up that short position just a little bit, just in case that report would be somewhat friendly. And then number two, I think from a more of a fundamental point of view, I think the wet weather down in Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, some of those southern states where they should really be planting corn now. And if they did get corn planted, now it's underwater and they're going to have to replant it. And some of those acres never got planted the first time. So I think that wet weather is also causing a little bit of a concern. You know, 5 million acres get planted down there, and, you know, Illinois alone plants over 11 million. So it's not like it's a big area, but when there's not a lot else to talk about, I think every little bit helps. And so I think that wet weather combined with the funds being still short helped the corn market out especially today.
Has it changed your mind at all since we talked on Commodity Week about the need to market old and new crop?
No. What this 4 cent rally did today was it did finally get us into the upper half of the corn range. So we're now just a penny or two above the midpoint instead of being a penny or two below the midpoint. But you know, another 7 or 8 cents higher, and we're right back up to the top end of the range. So I just don't see anything short of extreme weather problems later on in the growing season that's going to get us out of this trading range on the upside. So still think we're range-bound for the time being.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons. Brian Stark, also with the Andersons, by the way, will be with me tonight at the Champaign County Farm Bureau. That at 7 o'clock. It's open, and you can come.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
It's National Potato Chip Day. Historians generally give credit for the invention of the potato chip to George Crumb. In the summer of 1853, Crumb worked as a chef at a New York resort. One dinner guest was angry with Crumb's French fries, which he deemed too thick to his liking. Crum decided to irritate the guest by slicing and deep frying potatoes too thin to be skewered with a fork. But the plan backfired. The guest loved the brown paper-thin potatoes, and the potato chip was born. Crum knew a good thing when he saw it. By 1860, Crum opened his own restaurant that featured a basket of his potato chips on every table. On this day in agricultural history in 1794, Eli Whitney patented the cotton gin. His basic machine made it possible to clean 50 pounds of cotton a day. There is controversy over whether Whitney actually is the inventor. Some historians believe that Whitney's landlord, Catherine Littlefield Green, should get the credit. She reportedly suggested to Whitney the machine's brush-like components, but could not patent the device because women were not eligible to receive patents. Other historians give credit for the invention to Joseph Watkins, who was using a gin on his farm 2 years before Whitney applied for a patent. It was only after Whitney visited Watkins and examined the Watkins gin that Whitney developed his model. And in 1903, President Theodore Roosevelt established the first U.S. National Bird Sanctuary to protect pelicans nesting on Pelican Island near Sebastian, Florida. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Farm Credit Illinois joins in celebrating the rich history of Illinois agriculture.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Mark Russo is here. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois, to discuss the weather forecast. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Todd.
Tell me a little bit about the weather forecast as you see it going forward for the Midwest and maybe that Delta region, which is trying to plant a corn crop.
Well, first off, from a temperature standpoint, we are going to see more variability in temperatures here coming up. No sign of any extreme cold coming in, but this highly anomalous warmth that we're seeing and still will continue to see here in Illinois in the Corn Belt for another couple of days. That will give way to more cooler temperatures, kind of close to normal here over the upcoming weekend, but then that'll be followed by another warm-up. And so quite a bit of variability, but overall still biased on the warm side when you average out temperatures for the remainder of March. As far as precipitation totals are concerned, certainly it's a much more active pattern here coming up across much of the Corn Belt. It's especially true southern Midwest and down into the Delta. Now, the Delta has already seen extreme rainfall and some flooding issues, which right now is a concern for winter wheat, soft red winter wheat, and then also early corn planting. And with this pattern remaining in place, certainly those concerns will continue as we go through the remainder of March.
And that rainfall continues. Does it make its way, do you think, over a longer period of time for the beginnings maybe of April for the start of to a wet spring?
It's tough to say right now here, Todd. What we can say right now with confidence is that we've looking at the trends here, going, and this goes back all the way to last growing season, is that if you're in one of these what we call atmospheric rivers, and where that atmospheric river is directed, and this is originating from the tropical Pacific and the strong El Nino that we're seeing right now, but where that corridor of moisture is directed, you get copious amounts of rain. And we've seen that with numerous storm events here going all the way back to last growing season. We think that that's going to continue to be an item of risk going into this new planting season, but where is that going to be directed? Is it going to be in Illinois? Is it going to be Nebraska? Is it going to be more in the southeast? We don't know that right now, but that's what we're going to hone in on as we go through the next several weeks.
I have a meteorological function to ask you here. So an atmospheric river, I understand what that does. Are those more likely when we are in strong El Ninos and or strong La Ninas, I suppose? Yeah. So I'm asking whether they're related to events that are outside of the norm.
Yeah, no, great question there, Todd. And they are more related with El Nino events because they are stemming from the tropical Pacific. And when you have warmer than normal water temperatures with El Nino events, you have those warmer than normal waters across the central and eastern Pacific Ocean. So that's when the U.S. sees more copious amounts of rain during El Nino events.
Hey, thank you so much. I do appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo, of course, is with Risk Pulse. He's out of Chicago, Illinois. Joins us on the closing market report from Illinois Public Media for this 14th day of March. You can always listen to our programming anytime you'd like, from the opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between, at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. There you'll also find our schedule of events. This will be here in Champaign County, in Taylorville, and then in Joliet.